prayer answered by Luke Tasker.
Welcome to Potski Weeby. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
There was a trade deadline in the CFL last week, and after, I guess I should say, my mini meltdown about talking about Kevin Glenn, we have to open the show by talking about Kevin goddamn Glenn. He was traded from Saskatchewan to Montreal for a fifth round pick in 2016. What'd you think of the deal?
I was surprised by it. You know, all the talk of Glenn going to Hamilton and he ends up in Montreal. I think they may have, you know, should have made the move a little bit earlier. You know, he has four games to get used to the offense. You know, if they make the playoffs, might have been a little, you know, a little too late on that. So, you know, the way he looked against Hamilton wasn't too impressive. So it might take a little while for him to get accustomed to the offense. And that's what I was worried about if he got traded to Hamilton. You know, you have to get accustomed to the playbook, get used to your receivers. So we're seeing that what might have happened in Hamilton in Montreal.
Montreal's offense has been, I believe you referred to Tanner Marsh as sub-garbage last week.
Yeah.
So Montreal's offense has been sub-garbage is like the perfect word for it. And I'm with you, Glenn going there. It's a good move for Montreal because they needed some stability at quarterback. But how much he's going to be able to help them in what is now the last three games, I don't know. They're in tough now to make the playoffs. I thought they were a shoe-in for the crossover because of how good their defense was. But as we'll get into when we talk about Sunday's game, that defense can only take them so far. That offense is just terrible, and Glenn just looked completely out of sync. He obviously was working with a very limited playbook and will probably get better as the weeks go on, but their margin for error is very, very slim. I don't think this is going to help them much. And like you said, it seems a little too late.
Yeah, and he didn't get much help from his receivers either. There was a couple of drop balls, one in the end zone by S.J. Green. So, yeah, I think they're going to have to win out to make that crossover because, you know, you can't tie the Western team. You have to be one better than them. So, once again, I think it's all on Jim Popp's shoulders. You know, like I've brought this up many times. We've talked about it many times, but he came in, you know, chest out, saying this team is better than what they've been playing when he took over, and it just hasn't worked. So I think Jim Popp's in trouble.
Yeah, he came out right after he assumed head coaching roles and said his team could be undefeated. And this team has looked terrible pretty much since he took over. They were decent, I think. They were hovering around 500, I think. Maybe a little worse.
Yeah, just came off a win. So.
And yeah, you're right. They just came off a win. That show is just a complete disaster right now. And you said a few weeks ago that you thought Popp might be out of a job, and maybe he abandoned ship. There's a empty place out in Saskatchewan looking for a GM. Maybe he goes there. We're just speculating, obviously, but yeah, his time in Montreal could be over. But that wasn't the only trade made at the deadline on what was a surprisingly active trade deadline. I can't even think of many trades ever being made on deadline day, and there were two, which I think are hugely impactful. The Glenn one, obviously, and Saskatchewan sent Jerome Messam to Calgary for basically a bag of beans, a Neglist player, a third rounder in 2016, and a very good kicker, but a kicker nonetheless, and Tyler Kapinga. And Calgary also received Saskatchewan's fifth round pick. The rich just get richer, don't you think?
Do you know the status of John Cornish? Because I thought he was just nicked up, but is he out for an extended period of time?
He was going through concussion protocol because of a neck soreness or something, and apparently if you complain of neck soreness, you automatically have to go through concussion protocol. I don't think anyone really knows the status of Cornish, and perhaps this was just a preemptive measure. Messam's a free agent at the end of the year, so this is really just a rental. He was the best player in Saskatchewan for most of the season, so he was the only thing making them watchable for whenever he would get the ball. I just think even if Cornish is healthy, you're going to have Messam as the backup. You can roll those two horses out there. Calgary may have just made a statement that they're going for broke this year.
Cornish and Messam in the backfield. That's quite the tandem. And they got, you know, now they have three Canadian running backs with Matt Walter in there too. So, you know, a bit of an insurance policy Huffnagel was going for. If Cornish can't go, then Messam is a great replacement. I think it's a great move for Calgary in the short term. And, you know, they're probably not going to sign him after this season because they have Cornish, but you never know. And it's a pretty good rental, in my opinion.
Well, they didn't give up much to get him. Like I said, a kicker, a third-round pick, and a Neglist player, that's not a whole heck of a lot to get a player of Messam's caliber.
Messam was a guy that was kind of neglected in the Saskatchewan offense all year, and like he's still been racking up the numbers and doing so great, even with limited touches. So people thought that maybe Messam was on the decline, but this year he's really shown that he's back on track and ready to go, maybe has a couple more years left in him.
The other trade involves our Tiger Cats. They acquired Mike Edom from the Alouettes for a sixth-round pick next year and a conditional seventh-round pick in 2017. Edom was a first-round pick just two seasons ago in 2013. He was a third overall selection. For some reason, he fell out of favor in Montreal after he was an all-star and the team's nominee for Most Outstanding Rookie and Most Outstanding Canadian his rookie season. I don't know what happened there, but he's also a free agent at the end of the season. But if Hamilton can get him re-signed, again, the rich get richer.
Hopefully they get him signed after this year because it would be great for the ratio as well. You know, another guy in the secondary as a Canadian, you know, where to go, Courtney Steven and Butler. I'm not sure about their contracts if they're, one of those is up this year. And
Steven is a pending free agent.
Okay, so, you know, I'd like to see Steven's back, but if they can fit in Edom, I mean, that would be great too because this kid has a lot of potential. I mean, he showed that in his rookie season. And like you said, I don't know why he hasn't been playing much this year, but I'm sure Steinhauer and Austin can turn his career around and give him another shot in Hamilton in a great defense.
Yeah, it's just so weird to see a former third overall pick get dealt for a late round draft pick. The CFL draft is a lot of times, especially late, filled with, I don't want to say bad players, but it's you rarely see your fifth, your sixth, your seventh rounders really make much of a contribution. But a guy you pick third overall should be a cornerstone player for your franchise. If you whiff on that, maybe this explains why Montreal is having such a hard time. They seem to have not drafted very well recently. This just goes back to maybe Jim Popp has lost his magic touch.
Kind of looks that way, doesn't it? Like maybe he just needs a new team to start over again and build a team from the bottom like Saskatchewan. So I'm not sure what's going on with him, but it doesn't look good on him at all.
What also doesn't look good on him is Hamilton going into Montreal on Sunday. And this final score was 23-11, but that is not indicative of how dominating Hamilton was in that game. It wasn't blowout, but it easily could have been. They settled for field goals deep in Montreal territory that could have been touchdowns. And it didn't really seem at any point in that game like Montreal was threatening Hamilton at all.
No, I thought they were in control the whole game. Montreal scored like 2 points in the first half or something like that.
On a conceded safety. Hamilton gave them those points.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the defense just stuffed Montreal the whole game, and they just look out of sorts in Montreal. So it's just a bad scene there, but pretty good performance by the Ticats. You know, it wasn't spectacular, but they got the win. They moved the ball pretty well. They settled for field goals, which they weren't doing earlier in the season with Claros, and maybe that's Matthews not being able to get the ball in the end zone as much as Claros would, but that's understandable. So still putting points on the board, and the defense is still playing great, and especially special teams is contributing as well, so I was pretty happy with his performance yesterday.
What did we say weeks ago when Claros got hurt? The defense was going to have to play out of their mind, and special teams was going to have to continue to contribute, and what did we get? Three interceptions of Glenn. I believe there was also a fumble recovery in there. They blocked a punt, and the offense did what the offense does. Like, Jeff Matthews didn't have a great game, but his numbers, he was 21 of 25 for 241 yards and a touchdown. No interceptions. Again, he did have the fumble on a wicked blindside hit, I believe, by Winston Venable, but that would have been a fumble regardless of if he had had 3 games experience or if he had been in the league 20 years. You know what I mean? This guy just keeps getting better week in, week out. He's protecting the football, which is the biggest thing that we were worried about coming off that terrible relief appearance against the Eskimos. This team thinks that they can win a championship. I believe Luke Tasker said it in the post-game interviews, said he thinks that this team is good enough. Obviously, he's going to say that because he's a member of the team, but like Jeff Matthews can lead this team to a Grey Cup. I'm inclined to agree with him. I think this team can win a Grey Cup, and a month ago, we were sitting here pretty much in tears thinking the season was over, and now they sit alone in first place. I am really high on this team right now.
I feel the same way. I mean, you know, it's not going to be the same production with Matthews at the helm, but he's doing a great job filling in. He's doing what he has to do. So, like you said, 21 and 25, you know, that's pretty good percentage and not turning the ball over. That's all we have to get from him, you know. I think he has to improve getting the ball in the end zone a bit more. But other than that, I think he's done a spectacular job filling in for Claros so far.
Yeah, he's played essentially 10 quarters of mistake-free football. That second half against Calgary, he sort of seemed to put things together. The game against Saskatchewan, he was amazing. And this game against Montreal, he did what needed to be done. Speaking of did what needed to be done, we have got to talk about that catch by Luke Tasker. A week and a bit after Chad Owens made what people were saying was the greatest catch in CFL history, Luke Tasker just goes out there, and I don't even know how to describe it. If you didn't see it, you have to go find the video of it. It was simply amazing.
I was shocked that he caught that ball. You know, he leaned back. He was it's hard to describe, but it was beautiful, and he really helped out Matthews on the play. You know, kind of threw it behind him a bit, and he came back and caught it. And then he got up and got more yards because he wasn't touched when he went down. So you can't say enough about Tasker. He's just so reliable. You know, his great hands. He gets open. He's just a great receiver, and I hope to see him in a Ticats uniform for many, many years to come.
We're on a bit of a streak of not cursing on the show, so I won't repeat the words I used, but there were quite a few expletives that flew after he caught that pass because I was just in complete shock. It was one of the nicest catches I've ever seen, one of the most difficult catches. An over-the-shoulder catch, looking backwards like that, is not easy, and he was basically parallel to the ground. His back, again, like I said, you said you can't describe it. I cannot describe it. You have to just go out there and see this catch. I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah, and speaking of receivers, you know, Sinkfield has another great game. You know, he just keeps doing it and keeps doing it. He doesn't seem to drop any balls. He's a really fast guy, obviously, and I've been high on him the whole season, and he just keeps impressing me week in and week out. So just another offensive weapon to have from Matthews to throw to, you know, just give him the ball and let him do his thing.
Seems like every week we're talking about Terrell Sinkfield because every week he is going out there. And if he's not the leading receiver, he's the second leading receiver. He's making plays. Like you said, he's catching everything thrown to him. He has really developed into an elite wide receiver in this league. He's going to go over 1,000 yards this season. And considering where he was to start the year and at the tail end of last year, we've talked about it before. He was a bit in the doghouse. He had missed some games due to performance-related issues. I said this a few weeks ago, and I'm going to say it again. He is my MOP nominee from the Ticats right now, hands down with Claros out for the season. It's Sinkfield's nomination. He has been outstanding.
You know, we got to talk about the block punt again. I mean, another block punt from the Ticats. It's just starting to get a little bit ridiculous, but Mike Daly does it again. Gets another block punt in deep in Montreal's territory, so gets the offense right on the doorstep. They punch it in for a touchdown. It's just huge to get these plays for the offense to, you know, capitalize on. So they just keep doing it. It's just incredible.
You took the words right out of my mouth. 6 block punts on the season. 6. That's insane. You already said everything that needs to be said about that. Again, the special teams unit is just, they're out there making plays to help this team win. And like I said earlier, and like we've been saying for a while, the special teams makes plays. This team's going to win a lot of football games. It led to the very first touchdown and the only touchdown that Ticats scored all day. So it was a huge play, a huge momentum shift for Hamilton.
And then Banks had a big return in the fourth. So that's, BB doesn't need to score touchdowns on returns, but just get the team good field position. And that's great. So, you know, this special teams unit has just been dominant all season long, and if they can continue it, it'll be a huge bonus for the team going into the playoffs.
Speaking of dominant, that defensive effort yesterday might have been one of the best I've ever seen. They allowed next to nothing. They gave up a single touchdown, which came, I believe, with 1 second left to play. They gave up a field goal, and the other points Montreal scored was on a conceded safety. So the defense did everything they needed to do to win. It was just an all-around dominating effort by Hamilton's defense against Montreal.
Probably the best defense in the league, if not, you know, maybe 1A behind Edmonton. But they, like the special teams, they just keep doing it and doing it. And, you know, I was a little bit worried about Simone Lawrence. You know, he went down with that injury, didn't come back into the game. But I saw on Twitter that he said he's fine, so you can breathe a sigh of relief because, you know, he's one of the leaders on the defense. So I'm glad to hear that he's okay. It would have been a big loss for the defense.
I love Simone Lawrence, but that defense didn't really miss a beat without him in there. I believe it was David Caldwell who came in and replaced him. Mm-hmm. And Simone Lawrence is a great player, but that defense didn't look all that hampered by him not being there. He had the beautiful interception earlier in the game. Again, it just shows the depth of this team that a guy like Lawrence, who is an all-star player, who is in the conversation to be the team's most outstanding defensive player nominee again, like he was last year, it just shows that this team has so many good players that when a guy like that goes out and a guy like Caldwell, who hasn't seen a ton of time, comes in and the defense still shuts down Montreal, great job coaching, great job talent scouting, just a great job by everyone involved.
Yeah, and another player that was filling in for an injured player was Michael Ford, and I thought he had another, you know, not as great numbers, but another good game running the ball. You know, he's just a really good football player.
Yeah, he probably would have eclipsed 100 yards in that game if he doesn't get hit or hurt in the first half and miss the second half. He had 6 carries for 45 yards, which is incredible. He opened the game with that beautiful run that I think really set the tone that Hamilton's going to try to establish a running game. And then when he went out, Woodson came in. He was a little less than spectacular. He had one really nice run. He only had 38 yards on 12 carries, but Hamilton ran the ball 18 times, like designed runs, not with Matthews. They're probably over 20 into the probably 23 to 25 category with rushes, but on designed runs to running backs, 18 times, that's got to be, if not the most they've run it in a game, pretty darn close, especially in a game where CJ Gable wasn't there.
It's good to see, you know, establishing a run game. We've talked about it all season. It's been, it hasn't really been there, but now with CJ Gable coming back and, you know, Ford being in the picture, even Woodson with less than spectacular numbers, I think is a capable running back too. I think he has a lot of speed and can find the holes. So we're approaching the playoffs and we're finding the run game now. So I'm really happy about that.
It allows for pressure to be taken off of the rest of the offense and the quarterback especially. If the threat of the run is there, that forces the defense on its heels a bit. They don't know if it's going to be run or pass. Having a multifaceted offense is exactly what this team needs, especially when they're starting a quarterback who now has 3 starts under his belt. Giving him a running game to play off of just gives him more time when they do pass. And they're still a pass-happy team, don't get me wrong. This is always going to be a pass offense. The head coach is a former quarterback, for crying out loud. But to see some form of a running game and to see it work, it really, really, really makes me feel good.
Another great game from the O-line. I thought, you know, they gave Matthews a ton of time back there. If you give him a ton of time, he's going to make plays. So if the O-line can keep doing that, keep doing its thing, they seem to have gelled a lot throughout the season. They have been doing a great job for Matthews, a rookie quarterback back there.
Yeah, you know, another thing we haven't really talked about in a long time, and it was something that we hammered home early in the season, is penalties. It doesn't seem like this team is shooting themselves in the foot anymore with penalties.
Yeah, I think they led the league in penalties at one point. So, you know, it's great to see that go down. It just had to happen. They were winning while they were taking all these penalties, but eventually that would have bit them on the ass. So it's good to see this team get a little bit more discipline and take down those penalties.
They only had 6 penalties yesterday for 23 yards. That is, you know, look, 0 penalties for 0 yards is obviously what you'd want. But if that's all that they're going to get called for, I will take that every week.
Early in the season, it was, you know, 15 penalties, 17 penalties per game. So to see it go under 10, which I was really hoping it would, to go to 6 is just never going to get 0 penalties. You know that. We all know that. But, you know, to get it around 5 or 6 or 7, then that's acceptable.
Yeah, speaking of penalties, I want to touch on something that happened with Montreal. It was kind of weird. They took back-to-back time count violations on, I believe it was their first punt of the game, and then they got a delay of game call on the second half kickoff. It was very, very odd, don't you think? Like, especially the delay of game. How do you get a delay of game before the clock's even running?
That's a head-scratcher, and the back-to-back time count violations is a head-scratcher as well. How does that happen? I guess maybe they didn't have the right players in or something,
I would understand that on the first penalty. Oh, we didn't have a guy in there, or oh, we only had 11 guys on there, or oh, the wrong guy forgot. You know what I mean? But to then do it a second time, to me, is just this all comes down, as far as I'm concerned, to coaching. When you get a penalty like that back-to-back, and then you get one on the opening kickoff of the second half, right out of the locker room, that's when you should be at your most confident. You should never, ever get a penalty coming out of the tunnel at halftime or starting the game. That, to me, is just poor execution. That's poor coaching, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep, once again, it falls on Jim Popp. So he seemed like he fired everyone and, you know, put in Calvillo as the offensive coordinator. Calvillo had nothing to do with that, but, you know, put him in as the offensive coordinator. I'm not sure how that's working out. He's really fumbled the ball this year, for sure.
Man, we get our bold predictions wrong every week, but it's heartbreaking sometimes when we come this close. You went out on a huge limb and said the defense would get 3 interceptions and return 2 of them for touchdowns. You got half right. They did pick off Kevin Glenn 3 times. And this was back when we thought that Tanner Marsh was going to be the quarterback. We have to keep that into perspective. We didn't know at the time of recording last week that Glenn had been traded. That didn't happen until a couple of days later. So to still come 50% on that bold prediction, I applaud you, sir.
Yeah, it was close. It wasn't as close as the Eskimos game where he predicted 50 points and they got freaking 49. But I'll take it. I'll take it.
You want to talk about close. I came out and said the defense would hold the Alouettes to under 250 yards of offense. And when all was said and done, Montreal accumulated 255 net yards. Oh, so close. I could taste it.
Yeah, both you're closer than I was, but both pretty close for us this week.
Oh, man, so close, yet so far away. So let's get into a little bit of CFL news. We already talked about the trade deadline stuff, but there was another little tidbit that came out this week that Trevor Harris has apparently let it be known to the Argos that he wants to be the league's highest paid quarterback, hence the league's highest paid player. I'm pretty sure we're going to feel the same way about this one.
It's just silly, that notion. I mean, yeah, he's had a pretty good year, but to be the highest paid player in the league, the highest paid quarterback, I mean, you're going to get paid more than Claros and Mitchell and even Burris now, or Ricky Ray.
Darian Durant.
Durant, he hasn't done anything really. Yes, he's won some games, but to ask to be the highest paid player in the league at this point, you know, go out and win a Grey Cup, and then I could see him saying that. But like, just the whole idea is just silly to me.
He's really capitalized on the fact that he will be a free agent after this 1 year of starting, but he's put together 15 games, 15 decent games. He leads the league in touchdown passes, but he also leads the league in interceptions. So it's not exactly like he's been infallible, and his last few games have been not great. He hasn't at least thrown one interception in 8 straight games. That's not very good. If this was Henry Burris that was making this statement after he had thrown an interception in 8 straight games, we'd be laughing at him. So I feel like we have to do the same with Trevor Harris. He's played well, but highest paid player in the league? No. And the market, what market's going to, who's going to bid against Toronto for his services? Winnipeg maybe, perhaps Montreal. He's really timed this kind of poorly, because if you look around the league, it looks like BC has found their guy in Jonathan Jennings going forward. But Levi Mitchell's not going anywhere. Mike Riley seems pretty set in Edmonton, and I don't think they would make a move to dump Riley to bring in Harris. Durant is older, but you're not going to ditch Durant, whose last full season he won a Grey Cup in, to bring in Trevor Harris. Winnipeg has Willie, but maybe they could be convinced. Hamilton's got Calero, so they're not making a play for him. Toronto's in the picture. Ottawa's got Burris, but if they bring in Harris, then Burris has to go. There's just not really that much competition for his services, so it's almost like he's going to stay in Toronto and accept what they give him, or maybe go elsewhere. I just don't see any team bringing him in at $500,000. I don't think he's a $500,000 player.
Not yet, at least. You know, the best thing for him to do would be just keep playing, keep performing, wait till the end, keep his mouth shut, just wait till the end of the season, and then do your thing through your agent. Like, don't make it public. You know, it's just not a good thing to do. You know, just keep your mouth shut and play the best ball that you can, and then maybe you'll get paid not the highest, I don't think, in the league, but, you know, he'll be up there if he keeps performing the way he has.
Yeah, you can't give guys $500,000 after one season. Zach Caleros didn't get that when he came to Hamilton. He probably, I don't know his contract numbers because these things aren't released, but I'm guessing he's probably in the 250 range because he was signed to be a starter, so he was getting starter's money, and there's probably a lot of incentives in there as well. And Caleros is going to get a bigger contract when his contract's up. You got to see more out of Harris. You got to see him do it consistently. He's been really good this year, but he's had his brain farts. Like this last game against Calgary, he wasn't very good. So I understand football careers are short and you want to capitalize on your opportunities. And he's going to get a large paycheck. He's proven that he can start in the league. So he's going to sign somewhere and be a starter. He's not best player in the league. He's not top player in the league. He should not be paid more than a bunch of those quarterbacks that we mentioned. So on Friday night, Ottawa beat Winnipeg. Thanks for nothing, Winnipeg. We could have used that win, although Hamilton ended up getting their victory anyway. But with that back-to-back coming up against the Red Blacks later in the season, seeing them drop one to Winnipeg would have been nice. So do us a favor, Winnipeg, and get this win this upcoming week, please. But the big thing about Ottawa this year has been how great their offense has been. They were doo-doo butter in 2015. That was one of the worst offenses I've ever seen. And this is coming from a guy who watched some mid-2000s Ticats offense that couldn't complete a pass if they were throwing against air. So I know of that offense, and that offense last year in Ottawa was putrid. They made a change at offensive coordinator and brought in Jason Moss. Is he the guy that should be getting most of the credit for Ottawa's offensive renaissance?
Well, I think he should be getting a lot of the credit. Maybe not, you know, the players, the receivers have been doing a great job. Burse has had a great year. I thought that the O-line's been doing really good for Ottawa. But yeah, he's got to get a lot of the credit. I mean, he seems to be drawing up a good game plan every game. You know, they're producing a lot. He wasn't an offensive coordinator before this year, though. He was brought in.
Quarterback's coach, I believe, in Toronto.
Yeah, he's quarterback's coach. So yeah, I think he's done a great job. I think that he's one of the younger offensive coordinators that are coming up in this league, and he seems to have he's a pretty good player, and he seemed to have a great mind offensive-wise. So I think a large portion of the credit has to go to him, yes.
Well, he's actually younger than his starting quarterback, which has got to be strange. You don't find that very often.
No, not at all.
I'm not the biggest Jason Moss fan. We can all go into his tenure as Ticats quarterback, which was rather unsuccessful, but he had... yeah, exactly. He had a decent career, and he was mostly a backup, and he was backing up Ricky Ray, but he came in, and I believe he had a 5,000-yard season when Ray left Edmonton to try out for the Winnipeg Jets, and he had come in relief. And
the Winnipeg Jets?
Did I say Winnipeg Jets? New York Jets. Yeah, Ricky Ray decided to play hockey when the team didn't exist. Anyway, he came in and played well, but he was never going to be one of the league's best quarterbacks. And those guys usually tend to make really good coaches, I find. The guys who aren't the superstars. Which maybe this is a reason why Calvillo's having such a hard time, because you look at guys historically in any sport, guys who were the best at their position or the best at the league at some point, don't always make the greatest talent evaluators or coaches. Like Wayne Gretzky's tenure as head coach in Phoenix when he was with the Coyotes wasn't all that great. Michael Jordan, as a basketball owner and a decision maker, has been terrible. Mm-hmm. The only guy in any sport I can think of that was a great Hall of Fame player that became a really good coach was Larry Bird. So maybe Jason Moss's time sitting on the sidelines, watching things, soaking everything in, has made him capable of being one of the league's best offensive coordinators right now. And if he keeps this up, he's going to be a head coach before too long.
You know, I was questioning it a bit in the offseason when Ottawa brought him in, because he was a quarterback coach, so he never really had the experience as OC, but it turned out to be a great move by them. You know, good insight on their part to bring him in, because he seems to got the job down perfectly, and good things ahead for him as a coach, I'd say. Now, has Chris Williams met, exceeded, or been below expectations this season?
This is tough, because he is third in the league in receiving yards. So to say he's been a disappointment or he's been below expectations, I think, is unfair. He has been Ottawa's go-to guy. He just hasn't been explosive. Mm. And I think a lot of our memories of Williams is what he would do on special teams. He left the league in 2012, breaking a CFL record for return touchdowns. So you hear he's coming back, and he's signing in Ottawa, and you're like, oh man, he's going to explode on special teams, especially with all these new rules. And he has been completely ineffective on punts. So I think if we're going to say he's below expectations, it is definitely in the return game. He's averaging 6 yards per return and has a long of 22 on the season. For a guy who's making the amount of money he's making, that's not at all respectable. That's he might be one of the worst punt returners in the league at this point. But he's turned into one of the league's best receivers. So I guess met expectations would be, you know, to average him out, because he's met expectations as a receiver. He left the league as a 1,000-yard receiver, as a guy who scored a lot of touchdowns receiving. So he's come back at that level. But on the return side of things, he's been completely below expectations, because there was an expected idea of him and Brandon Banks dueling punt returns at some point. But in special teams, he's just been completely irrelevant.
Yeah, I think he's coming on really strong later in the season in the receiving game. DBs just can't keep up with his speed. It's just he has pretty good hands, and he's really, like you said, he's over 1,000 yards now. So I think the problem with the return game is there's just the blocking is terrible. I mean, he doesn't have any lanes to go through, so the blocking schemes are bad, and the blockers aren't providing those lanes. So I don't think you can really put the blame on Williams for the poor punt return yards. If he was in Hamilton, I think he would have, you know, been doing what Banks has been doing this year. So if they can get better schemes going and get better blocking on special teams, maybe next year, I think Chris Williams could have a big year within the return game. But I'm going to say that he's met expectations, just like you said, because of the really good play as a receiver. You know, he's pretty much the go-to guy. Burris and him have a really good rapport, so he could do some really big damage down the stretch here and maybe into the playoffs with his speed and ability to get open in the receiving game.
Saturday saw a game in Hamilton that I attended. Calgary defeated the Toronto Argonauts at a game where there was about 45 people in the stands. It was really sparsely attended. I don't know what it looked like on TV. I'm guessing since you went to the late Saturday game, you did not get a chance to really watch the game live. But it looked in the stands from where I was sitting that there were a lot of people there. But I think it was one of those instances where everyone sort of clustered together. And it was not even a good football game, really. I was sitting there watching the game. And to be honest, it was a game that I didn't have much of a rooting interest in because I don't like the Argos, obviously. And I'm not the biggest Calgary Stampeders fan at the moment. So it was one where I was paying attention, but I went with some friends, and they brought their niece, and we were talking to her and trying to keep her into it and stuff. So it was I was there, and I was paying attention, but I wasn't as engaged as I normally am. But the one thing I did notice, and we talked about this when we talked about him wanting to be the top-paid player in the league, was Trevor Harris had a very, very poor game. And I know that the Argos have come out and said it's not going to happen, but is it time for them to start seriously considering playing Ricky Ray?
No harm in considering it. I mean, this guy's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's won 3 championships. He's one of the most accurate passers that we've ever seen in the CFL. So if he's completely healthy, it's got to be in the back of Milanovic's mind. You know, we have this guy sitting on the bench when he could be throwing the ball completing passes at a high percentage. You know, it just seems like he's such a great player to be sitting on the bench. You know, it's kind of a waste. He's getting up there in age. You know, how many more years are we going to see of Ricky Ray? So Trevor Harris has done a great job, but you got to think maybe, go with Ricky Ray to finish out the season and see what he can do for the playoffs. Because if you're comparing Harris to Ricky Ray, you got to think that you got to start Ricky Ray.
Midway through the season, when Harris was just destroying teams, was throwing for 300 yards, was like near 80% completion percentage, this question would have been absolutely ridiculous. But his numbers, like I said earlier, over the last half of the season have not been impressive. He leads the league with 17 interceptions. 13 of those have come in the last 8 games. 13 picks in 8 games? You're not going to win many ball games. The one thing Ricky Ray does, like you said, one of the most accurate passers to ever play in this league, he does not throw a lot of interceptions. And while Harris only had 4 in his first 7 games, which is amazing and excellent, and that's exactly what you were hoping for, these last 8 starts have not been kind to him. And I know Ray has come out and said he's not ready yet, but if he's dressing and he's practicing, he's got to be ready enough to get out there and throw the football. I'm not saying that they have to play him, but if the Argos want to make any, if Trevor Harris keeps playing like this, the Argos are one and done in the playoffs no matter where they play. I've really soured on Harris. I was always taking a wait and see approach with him, and I looked foolish earlier in the season, but it seems like as teams have gotten more footage on him and have sort of figured out his tendencies, that he's not playing at that all world level that he was back in the summer.
Yeah, and if they're going to make that change, they better do it quick, because Ray's going to have some rust on him, so he has to get a couple games in before the playoffs start. So if they're going to make that switch, they got to do it quick.
Yeah, you don't want him going into a playoff game cold. Absolutely not.
Watching Calgary play this whole season, Mark McDaniel's been producing game after game after game. He's not the number one receiver, but Eric Rogers is, but he's a close second. So do you think Mark McDaniel is one of the best receivers in the league?
I think the answer's got to be yes. He's definitely, yeah, I think, the most underrated player in the league. I don't think anyone talks about him nearly as much as they should. And right now he's 5th in receiving yards. He's gone over 1,000 yards. He's being overshadowed by Eric Rogers, and it seems like that's sort of been his over the years, is that he's always been really reliable, but there's been someone else who's overshadowed him. When he was in Hamilton for those 2 seasons or 3 seasons, they had Arlan Bruce, who was a borderline, if not guaranteed, Hall of Fame receiver. So they get Bruce in a trade with Toronto, and then McDaniel as a rookie in the second and third year sort of gets overshadowed by Bruce. And then I think his last year in Hamilton, I think he was cut midway through the season before he signed with Calgary. Andy Fantuz had come in, so Fantuz had been above him. And then he goes to Calgary, and they had Nick Lewis, and they had, oh my God, I can't even remember all the receivers. Mo Price, who had breakout games, and even at the beginning of this season, Jeff Fuller was amazing in the first week of the season and completely fell off. But like you said, McDaniel has just constantly been producing, and he's not a guy teams game plan for, so he's always finding those open spaces. I equate him, his skill set, a lot to what Luke Tasker brings to the Ticats, and I think Luke Tasker is one of the best receivers in the league. So if I'm going to say that, then yeah, I got to put in for McDaniels being one of the league's best receivers.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think in the last couple of games, he's become the number one guy, or at least, the number one target for Bolivar by Mitchell. Rogers might be titled the number one guy, but if you're looking at receiving yards and catches, McDaniel is that guy right now. So he just produces week after week, year after year. So you got to put him up there in the top five of the best receivers, the most dependable receivers. So I'm a big McDaniel fan. I think he has a lot of credit coming his way because people are going to really start noticing. Like, you were at the game, but at halftime, the panel on TSN was really praising McDaniel, saying he's one of the best receivers in the league. So it's good to see him get some credit coming his way.
He's the safety valve for both Levi Mitchell right now. Yeah, you're right. Rodgers is the number one guy. He leads the league in receiving yards. He's making big plays. But when he's not there, the next read is McDaniel, and it seems like he's always open whether he's covered or not. You know what I mean? So, yeah, big props to McDaniel. And I'm glad he's sort of finally getting his due because I think he's been an underrated player for a very long time. I remember when he was released by the Ticats, I was not angry, but a little bummed because I thought he could turn into exactly what he's turned into in Calgary. The last game of the week took place in Edmonton in a game you attended, so you got to see John Jennings live. What was that like?
It was good. You know, he had an okay game. It wasn't his best game, but I thought he performed pretty well against a top-notch defense like Edmonton. It was a really good game to be at live. You know, it was a beautiful day. Can't complain with overtime football, you know, a little bit extra football, so it was great.
Yeah, probably the most entertaining game of the week and definitely the closest. So it ended kind of interestingly because BC had the ball with very little time left and decided to punt. And they decided to play the field position game by trying to pin Edmonton deep instead of punting for a single. They were up by 3 at the time. If they would have gotten the single, they would have been up by 4, which would have forced Edmonton to drive the length of the field, which they, to their credit, they ended up driving the length of the field anyway and may have very well scored a touchdown. But it would have forced them to not kick the field goal and force them to go for a touchdown. What did you think of that? Did you think VC should have tried for the single instead of trying to pin the Eskimos deep?
You know, it's a tough call because pinning them deep is always a good strategy, but then they could just kick the field goal and send it in overtime, which happened. It could go either way, but I would have went for the single, you know, make them score the touchdown. Edmonton drived all the way down the field. You know, they got real close to the end zone, but you never know. Like, you can drive all the way down and not be able to punch it into the end zone. So I would have went for the single, make them score the touchdown. Yeah, it's just a tough decision, but I would have went for the Rouge.
Same here. I would have punted for the single, given the Eskimos the ball, and said, go drive and score the game-winning touchdown. If you do it, well, then good on you. But BC's defense had played really well in that game. Yeah. They had intercepted Riley and returned it for a touchdown, and they did allow the massive touchdown pass to Darius Bowman, but I thought BC's defense had performed really well. And that's the second time this season in Edmonton that they have played the Eskimos really close. I would have gone for the single and said, hey, go beat us with your offense. Go score a touchdown and try to take this game from us. That's what I would have done.
Now, I was a little surprised I saw Brant Shaw doing the kickoffs, and I didn't know he was back yet. I was a little surprised that he wasn't handling the field goal kicking because he had such a great year up to his injury in the field goal department. So are you surprised that they went with Sean White to kick field goals, or do you feel like that was the better decision to keep White in the game?
I think White's been really hot since he signed with Edmonton. He's 18 of 20 on field goals, and more importantly, 7 for 7 on point afters. And he did have the big 53-yard game winner against Winnipeg a couple weeks back that I think endeared him very, very much to the coaches. Shaw was very spotty on point afters before he got hurt, and it really hurt Edmonton in games that should not have been that close. He's a good field goal kicker, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe the Eskimos are looking at this White-Shaw situation the same way Calgary looks at the Paredes-Maver situation. When Maver was drafted, he was drafted to be the punter and the kicker. Wasn't so great on field goals. They bring in Paredes, who has been, for the most part, really good. Maybe the best kicker in the league since he's been in it. And they put Maver at punter, and I would say Rob Maver is the best punter hands down in the CFL right now. Maybe they're looking at a similar situation where they have White kick the field goals and let Shaw concentrate on punting, because Shaw is a really strong punter and a really good kickoff man. He's got a very strong leg, but he's just not super accurate. So I think maybe they made the right decision. I guess I'd say I'm not really surprised because White didn't really do anything to lose the job. So it's not like Shaw's lost his job completely. He's still on the game day roster, but he's only really handling kickoffs and punts. And I think that might be the smart way for Edmonton to go going forward.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge Sean White fan before he came to Edmonton, but he's been proving himself pretty well, you know, since he's been here. So I like the decision. You know, he's right the hot hand right now. He's making a lot of field goals and making the long ones too. So good on the S for, you know, making a tough decision when Grant Charles was kicking field goals pretty well. So I like the decision.
All right, so we are now entering the final three games of the season, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats are going to BC to take on a Lions team that is fighting for their playoff lives. Hamilton clinched their playoff spot with BC's loss last week in Edmonton. Hamilton could do no worse than be third in the West, and then they went out and beat Montreal and took sole possession of first place. So Hamilton's position is clear, but they're still fighting for first overall. They want that bye in the first round. So this is not a gimme game by any stretch, with the Lions wanting it. I'm looking mainly at Hamilton offensively continuing to play essentially turnover-free football. Matthews had the one fumble against Montreal, but that's the only one he's had now in 10 quarters of play. So let's see them continue that, and I think that they have no problems getting this win.
I agree. You know, you just gotta maintain possession of the ball. He's been doing a good job of driving down the field, getting some points. I would like to see the offense score more touchdowns. I think that will come. So BC has been a tough place to play for the Tiger Cats over the years. And you're right, like, BC is fighting for the playoff lives. So they're gonna bring all they have against the Tiger Cats. So it's not going to be an easy game. But if we don't turn over the ball, then I think we can win this game. And, you know, they'll maybe have Gable back. I'm not sure. Maybe not. But even if they don't, they'll probably run the ball well with Ford. So, yeah, I think that the Tigers can get this win, but it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I am a little concerned about the running game with Ford's injury on Sunday and the status of CJ Gable still up in the air. Fantuz, we didn't even talk about, made his return to the lineup against Montreal. Was pretty ho-hum, I guess you could say. Didn't really see a lot of action, but it was nice for him to get in there and kind of knock the rust off.
Yeah.
So I know it's a short week for the Ticats. They played on Sunday. This game's on Friday, so they have Monday off, and then they will be practicing Tuesday, Wednesday before, I would assume, flying out to BC on Thursday and doing a bit of a walkthrough. I'm not sure if that'll be enough time to get Gable into the lineup. We'll have to wait and see. We'll probably know better come Tuesday and Wednesday, depending on what he does practice-wise. But I hope Ford's injury was mostly just one that kept him out of the end of that game, because if Ray Hawley's got to be inserted in there, I know he's had some good games. The running game becomes a bit of an issue for me, and I think that the key to this team is going to be running the football well to help take the pressure off Matthews, like we talked about earlier in the show, to keep this team humming along.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that Hawley wasn't in the game after Ford went out. They went with Woodson, so Hawley's not injured, is he?
No, but I think they moved him to the practice roster, so I don't think he's been dressing since Ford mm-hmm. assumed starting duties, and they've always sort of used Woodson when he's healthy as the backup because it helps for ratio reasons. And I think that's also why we didn't see a ton of Fantuz, because with Woodson playing running back, you didn't have the necessity of having to have Fantuz out there. And since he is working himself back from an injury, like I said, he was probably not a huge part of the game plan. He's just out there to sort of get himself back into game condition. So maybe the injury to Ford in the game kind of helped in that respect. He wasn't asked to burden so much of the load. But I would assume that if Gable can't go and Ford can't go, Hawley would be the guy that gets the call.
Yeah, that should be I agree with you that I hope Ford's okay, but it should be interesting to see Hawley back in there if he gets the start, because, you know, he's had his flashes, but overall pretty underwhelming this year. So I'm not sure if Hawley's in there, if they're going to run the ball as much as they would if Ford or Gable were in there. So it might not be as big a factor, but hopefully Gable's back, because anytime he's back, it's a great thing for the team.
Defensively, though, I think the big thing is containing John Jennings. He has been lights out. When he's not killing it, he's still playing extremely well, especially for a guy who, I guess his amount of starts would be pretty close to what Jeff Matthews is. So we have a couple really young quarterbacks in this game, but he has been a dynamic playmaker since he has assumed the starting role in BC, and doesn't look like he's going to be giving it up anytime soon. So I think what the team needs to do is find a way to contain him both in the passing game and in the running game, because we both know he can take off and run if he gets the opportunity.
Yeah, keep him in the pocket, you know. Don't let him improvise, you know, get outside the pocket, run around, give the receivers time to get open. So, you know, use that, you know, Hickman and Norwood off the ends, get him pressure, and, you know, stuff Andrew Harris. You know, I don't think, you know, I'm not really worried about Andrew Harris. He's kind of fallen off the map after a really good start to the season. He hasn't been doing much at all. So, you know, if they can take him out of the game, which I don't think should be a problem, it would take another overrated weapon off the field.
Overrated weapon. Oh, you got to get that in there, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, early in the season, he was really good. And that, he, like you said, he has kind of fallen off very, very much in the last few weeks. And Hamilton contained him and made him a complete non-factor the last time these two teams played. But that's when Hamilton was just rolling over everybody. And this is a different team now. They're a little more banged up. They don't have their all-world quarterback at their disposal anymore. So I don't expect this to be a repeat of what we saw in Hamilton in August. I still think the Ticats, if they play mistake-free football and they keep keep Jennings from beating them, and don't allow those very talented receivers, like Manny Arsenault, we killed him a couple weeks ago, and ever since then, it seems like he's just been on a rampage. Maybe it had a lot to do with getting Jennings back there, quarterback. Hawkins has been a weapon. Sean Gore has stepped up and played really well. There's a lot of weapons on this BC offense that the defense is going to have to take into account.
Yeah, they just seem to be using Arsenault. They're using his talents correctly now, I think. You know, they're throwing him fades in the end zone. He's a big guy. He goes up and grabs the ball. So as soon as Jennings got into the starting quarterback for the Lions, Arsenault was taken off. So he's a dangerous threat, especially down near the end zone. So they got to keep him in check for sure. And like you said, Hawkins is a really dangerous weapon as well. You know, he's such a fast guy. He makes a lot of plays. He's a good receiver. So yeah, a talented bunch in BC for sure. You know, the record doesn't show it, but they're still a dangerous team.
Last week, people were talking about them being the most dangerous offensive team in the league. Since then, they've lost two games, and obviously that topic of conversation has cooled a bit, but they're still, like I said, they're fighting for their playoff lives, so they're going to be throwing everything they can at the Ticats. They need this win desperately. So I'm expecting a really close game. Like you said, Hamilton has not had the best run of success out in BC. It's a late Friday game, short week. This is going to be a lot closer, I think, than people anticipate. And I still think the Ticats are talented enough to get the win, but I would not be surprised if they unfortunately suffered defeat. But I think if the Ticats can get this win, I think they're only going to really need one win in their last two against Ottawa to get first. So this is a big game for the Ticats.
Huge last three games, you know, back-to-back against Ottawa. I'm really looking forward to, you know, Burris is going to be highly motivated, and it's just going to be a really exciting end to the season. If we can get, like you said, if we can get a couple wins out of this, I think we're golden.
Bold prediction time?
Yes, sir.
Fire it out.
All right, I got Sinkfield and Tasker both over 100 yards receiving.
Oh, crap. No, that was mine.
No,
okay, so you know what? I'm coming up with one on the fly then. Give me, let's see, Norwood and Hickman combined for four sacks.
Okay, that's a good one.
I figured that Tasker and Sinkfield would be your guys, so I should have come up with another one, but that's on me.
It's all good. That was a pretty good on-the-fly bold prediction.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, but yeah, let's go with that. Hamilton's defense has not gotten a lot of sacks recently, so I think they're due for a breakout, and those two guys, if they get going, they're pretty unstoppable. So yeah, I feel pretty confident in my pick.
I like that. I like that. All
right. Are you ready to ask some questions?
Yes, I am the question asker, and yeah, I shall ask them.
We actually got some this week because we weren't in turkey overload and completely forgot. So let's get some of these going.
As Mike Destrux wants to know, the Ticats have so many strong receivers. If everyone was healthy, who would be your starting lineup?
I got to think you and I are going to completely agree on this. This is probably going to be a quick answer. I have Fantuz, Tasker, Sinkfield, Grant, and Tolliver.
Yeah, that's who I had too. So yeah, that's a pretty good receiving corps when everyone's healthy. So I totally agree. Now from Major League CFL, your thoughts on Fantuz. Did you notice they had him split wide primarily the whole game?
I kind of touched on Fantuz a bit in our preview of the Lions game. I didn't notice him much, but like I said, I think he was more using this game to, I believe I used the term, knock the rust off, and I think that's true. I didn't really notice where he was playing, but again, like I said, I didn't really notice much of his play, so I guess I don't really have any thoughts on this. Do you?
Yeah, I didn't notice that he was out wide a lot, but I think he's being eased into the offense, not giving him a lot of looks last game, just like you said, knocking the rust off. So if he was split out wide a lot, I think he'll be brought back in to the slot, his usual position in the games going forward. So I think you'll see a lot more catches from Fantuz in the last three games than going into the playoffs.
Even if you're splitting him out wide, him just being on the field takes attention away from the other receivers. Just Fantuz dressing and being out there is a good thing for this offense.
Now, at USFL, Tecmo wants to know, do you think BC could shock someone in the playoffs?
Well, I want to jokingly say they could shock me by making the playoffs, but I think I've convinced myself that they're going to. The gut reaction is to say no because of how good Edmonton and Calgary has been. But if you look at the last two games that this team has played against Edmonton and the last game they played against Calgary with John Jennings as quarterback, it might not be out of the realm of possibilities for them to stage a very huge upset. I just think that Calgary's going to end up finishing second, and they're going to be pissed off that they did not get the bye and are going to take it out on whomever they play. So I'm not going to say that they can shock and even win one playoff game, but I want this to be recorded just in case they do. I wouldn't be surprised because of how well that they have played against the West's two best teams.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. If the offense can play to their potential with Jennings, and I think that they have they could have a better offense than Edmonton. So I don't think it's a high possibility, but I think that it could happen. But if I was betting on it, I'd definitely take Edmonton or Calgary over BC. So I just think that obviously they're just better teams overall. So like you said, I wouldn't be shocked, but I wouldn't bet against Edmonton or Calgary.
No, I'm not putting any money on BC to win a playoff game, but if they happen to do so, it wouldn't floor me in the way that other... Like, we've seen upsets in playoff games. We saw a 9-9 Toronto team go into Montreal a few years ago and beat the heavily favored Owls. We saw Hamilton go into Montreal and beat the Owls in a playoff game when, you know, that big game they had at the Big O in 2011, I think it was, 55-48 or something. It was just a huge game. It was a great game. So upsets happen all the time. We've seen under 500 teams win Grey Cups. So anything's possible. Is it probable? No, I'm not betting against the Stamps or the Esks at this point.
We've seen, you know, Cleo Lemon.
Let's not, you know what? Go, next question. You don't have to finish that. That is maybe my most disappointing live game experience was sitting through, oh God, I don't even want to talk about it. Let's move on.
I was just, I was so pissed off at the end of that game. But
anyways.
At Fender Guy, pretty simple question. Predict finish order in the East.
Okay, so like we had a question similar to this a few weeks ago where I sat down and looked at the remaining schedules of the team and predicted wins and losses. So I did that here too. We obviously know Montreal can finish no higher than fourth, so we don't really have to talk about them. But what I have is Hamilton winning two of their remaining three to get to 12-6, Toronto winning two of their remaining three to get to 11-7, and Ottawa winning one of their remaining three to get to 10-8. So I have the Ticats in first, the Argos in second, and the Red Blacks in third.
Interesting. I'm going to go with the Ticats in first. I think they split the series with Ottawa and get the win against BC. So
yeah, that's what I had. So yeah. 12 and 6. Yeah, so, same thing.
So
do you want the schedules for the other two teams?
Yeah, I think Ottawa plays Winnipeg and then Hamilton twice, right?
Yep.
And then Toronto, I'm not sure.
Okay, so let's start with, go with Ottawa, because, yeah, they play Winnipeg this week and then back-to-back with Hamilton. So you got them losing one to Hamilton, winning one in Hamilton. What do you have them doing against Winnipeg?
I got them beating Winnipeg, so...
So you would have them at 11-7.
Yeah, so I'm going to go Hamilton, Ottawa, Toronto.
Okay, Toronto's remaining games are Montreal. They're all at home, quote-unquote, because the Montreal game is going to be played in Hamilton. Montreal, BC, and Winnipeg. So
they have to win all three of those games to get to 11 wins, right?
No, they don't have to win two. They're 9-6.
Right.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more difficult, don't you think?
Yes. Wow. I'm still going to go Hamilton, Ottawa, Toronto.
So you think Toronto's going to lose two of their remaining three games then?
Yeah. Just the way that, you know, Harris has been throwing picks, and I think they fall off a bit here in the last three games. So, yeah, Hamilton, Ottawa, Toronto.
Oh, okay. Okay, fair enough. I had them, just for my own purposes, I had them losing to Montreal this week, mostly just because of Toronto's never won in Tim Hortons Field, and I really want that to keep up. So go Owls, go. Oh, I felt dirty to say it. But they can't catch the Ticats anymore, so Montreal can win the rest of their games for all I care. Then I had them beating BC and Winnipeg. The Winnipeg game to me is the most interesting because if the Bombers are out of it, what will they really have to play for? If BC gets a couple wins here and there, or if BC is a game up on Winnipeg going to that final week, then Winnipeg can't catch BC because BC has the tiebreaker, I believe. So a lot could depend on the outcome of that final game. If Winnipeg's fighting for their lives, I think they got a shot to beat the Argos, and then your prediction could come true. I'm just not entirely sure that it will, but we'll have to wait and see. So you got Hamilton, Ottawa, Toronto. I got Hamilton, Toronto, Ottawa. And this will be like the first time these three teams have all made the playoffs in the same year, and like I think like almost before I was born. Like I think it was 83 or something, so it was definitely before you were born.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, and this year, you know, sometimes these semi is a bit, you know, there's a good team and then a kind of not very good team, you know, West crossover that sneaks in, but this year the East semi I'm looking forward to a lot. If it's Toronto and Ottawa, you know, that's going to be a really good game, I think. So the West semi might not be as good, but maybe if BC's in there, they could make it really competitive. So I'm looking forward to both semifinals this year.
Yeah, my heart wants the game to be in Ottawa, the East Semi, that is, just because of how raucous their crowd gets. I think that place would be bumping to an extent that we may have never heard before at a CFL stadium. Those fans can get loud. I'm going to experience it firsthand in the last week of the season when I head up to Ottawa to watch the Cats play the Red Blacks, but I would really like Ottawa to host that playoff game. I just don't know if they're going to be able to get enough wins after losing the season series to the Argos. And, you know, a playoff game in the Dome is just not going to be all that great. There's going to be no conflicts. The game's going to be in Skydome because the baseball season will be long over by then. And with the way the Blue Jays are playing, their season might be over before the end of the week. Heck, it might be over before this podcast even hits the public midweek. So who knows? I would really like the game to be in Ottawa. I just don't see it. I just can't see Ottawa winning enough. That back-to-back against Hamilton is going to be very difficult for them. But and you know what? I'm hoping you're right, but I'm going to stick with my gut and say Toronto finishes second.
Yeah, you never know. The playoff game is at the Skydome. You know, Ottawa's a fair ways away from Toronto. I know this, but I still think the Ottawa fans will travel pretty well. Not as good as Ticat fans because, you know, it's right down the QEW, but I think they'd show up pretty good for you know, they've been starved for a winner a long time in Ottawa for their football team, so they can make some noise at the Skydome like the Ticats do. Not to that extent, but yeah, I think a good gathering could show up.
You know, that's a good point. They haven't had a playoff team in Ottawa since the mid-90s, so maybe they would organize some giant bus trips or train trips or something to get those fans down there. Like you said, not in the numbers that Ticats fans go there. That East Final in 2013 was, I'm not going to say it was 50-50 because I think that's giving Ticat fans a little too much credit, but that was one of the loudest crowds from start to finish that I've ever been at. So I think Ottawa fans would travel really well. They want to watch a playoff game. It's not going to be hard to get tickets to the game, so we might see a rather large Ottawa contingent, a few thousand people, descend upon the Dome for an East semifinal, which would, I think that would really, really get the team going. So I think, like you said, we're in for a good East final for the first time, I think, in a long time. That Hamilton-Montreal game, I think the elements made it a little unfortunate. I'm talking about the 2013 one that was in Guelph. That wasn't a great game. But I think the last really great East semi would probably have been 2011, wouldn't you say? The Hamilton-Montreal one?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. You know, that one stands out. That's one of the best football games I've ever watched. You know, one of the most entertaining games I've ever seen. So that one really stands out for sure.
But enough rambling about playoff games. We'll get there soon. Sooner than I would have thought. I can't believe we're only 3 weeks left in the season.
Yeah, it just flew by.
Yeah, and it also flew by as this show. As always, subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you want to leave a rating or a comment, you can do so on there. I see those as well. We don't get many on there, but we're getting people listening to the show, and that's all I really care about. But if you want to have your questions asked and answered by Mike and myself, hit us up on Twitter. Mike, give him your handle.
Mike_Ticats.
I am at @JoshSmith_82. And we didn't get any this week, but feel free to post your questions in the comments section of 3Down Nation. Those are usually a little bit longer, so we get a chance to get more involved in the questions. Although this week's questions were pretty good, so we're not gonna crap in the mouths of the guys who asked this week. But I like those questions on the comment section just because they're a little bit more involved. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.